Yep, we're ready to go. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 18th of September, 2012. Please ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Prior to beginning, go through the agenda, many of our staff that is present, and some of you are aware, Steve Lekwa, of course, as you recall, had been battling about with esophageal cancer and had been at Mayo Clinic, and he is now home, and he is resting. Steve, the latest email indicated that he's not at a point where he wants to have a lot of visitors come in, but he's very thankful for everyone for their thoughts and prayers during these challenging times. So continue to keep him in your thoughts, and we're hoping that he will be able to have a speedy recovery. So very challenging time for Steve Lekwa, who was our former conservation director. Okay. Going back to the agenda, this is the public comment section. This is where members of the audience may address the board on a topic on today's agenda. We have one request that I'm just probably going to hold on until we actually bring the topic up, unless you, if that's okay with you, since it'll be germane to what we're talking about. Okay. Then with that, is there anyone else that wants to address the board regarding another topic of concern? Okay, yes, please.
I'd like to wait until the TIF discussion.
Oh, okay, would you fill out one of these, please? Thank you. All righty. Okay, then next item is item number four, is the consideration of the minutes of 9/11/12. Okay.
I'll move approval. Second.
Been moved and second, the approval of the minutes. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Okay. Personnel action, item number five. All items as listed have been reviewed.
I'll move approval of the personnel actions.
Second.
Been moved and second, the approval of the personnel action. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Consent. Personnel action are approved. The next item is item six, is the consent agenda. Board, please add road closure number 1323 and utility permit number 1326 through 1330. Again, road closure 1323, utility permits 1326 through 1330. All other items are set to go.
I'll move approval of the consent second. Agenda with the noted changes.
It's been moved and second, the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Roll call, two.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Next order of business is public hearing. Item number seven on the agenda. This is the third and final consideration of ordinance number 216, rezoning certain lands located in section 24 of Palestine Township under the ownership of Lance Carson from R1 residential to AR agricultural residential. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
Leanne, I'm just interested if we've gotten any comments. No comments.
Okay.
Last two times we've talked about that.
All right. We can save you the trip up. This is the third and final reading for consideration. We've reported that we've received no additional comments. So I will open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to this issue. Seeing no one, then I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for direction.
Move approval, final consideration of Ordinance 216.
Second.
Been moved and second for approval of final consideration of ordinance number 216. Further discussion? Roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Tooth?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Ordinance number 216 is adopted. And thanks to Planning and Development Department and all those connected with this process. Okay, item number 8, additional items. This is a presentation of Story County's cumulative reserve refund check from ICAP, presented by Ken Bilbrey from ICAP, Brian Anderson and Susan Hosier from NAPTIDESCO. Welcome. It's always great to have you here. And if you would like to just come up, if you want to make any comments prior to that, please feel free to do so. Ken, you can come right here to the microphone, you and Brian. And this is more for the benefit of the public. The board is certainly familiar with ICAP and the program and
how the process is.
Great.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's nice to be here on a day like this. And I am Brian Anderson from NAPTIDESCO Insurance Agency. I'd like to represent also Susan Hosier, Senior Account Manager, and Mr. Ken Bilbrey, President of Bilbrey Insurance Services. And Ken's firm handles the administration member services for ICAP, which is the Iowa Communities Assurance Pool. And today I'd like to turn the meeting over to Ken, and he'll present some information on ICAP and the Cumulative Reserve Fund and also the check. Ken?
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the opportunity to come up here with good news. It's a lot better than the opposite. I have a check from the Iowa Communities Assurance Pool to you for $29,994.32. And I think an explanation would be in order for your understanding in regard to where this money comes from. The pool is a group self-insurance program, as you know, for Iowa public entities. Currently, 679 Iowa public entities participate. The pool was started in 86, so we're 26 years old. Since 1992, the Board of Directors has returned investment income. Since this program is owned by Story County and the other 678 members, that amount plus the cumulative reserve fund has amounted to a lot of money that has gone back since 92. 2006, the Board of Directors met after a couple of years of investigation into the opportunities to return money. How much is enough was the question that the board kept asking each other, and it was determined that there was a formula that they'd like to follow, and they did that and returned cumulative reserve fund capital, if you will, that every ICAP member on a pro rata basis contributed to the pool in the first 6 years of their participation with ICAP. Story County joined the pool in 2001. Since 2008, over $250,000 has come to you in the form of a check like this or a credit voucher, which is the investment income that has been returned to ICAP members, as I indicated, since 92. That's a testament not only to the fact that you own it, but also to the effect that you take loss control seriously. The pool does. The pool is very active in the loss control arena, and Story County has been an active participant of that since the beginning, particularly with the influence from the local agent, NAPTIDESCO, and, of course, Brian and his staff, as an integral part of the total success of the program. So, without further ado, I have the check, and I don't know if you get it, Mr. Clinton, or if you have...
The board will receive it, but I will join you. I told Susan
I'd like to be the bookie.
I told Susan I dressed up because I knew she was going to be part of this picture. Marie and I.
you want another letter.
Is that right, Susan? You got 40 something last year, I thought.
Lisa's got her hand raised. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming out. Markley's over there with her hand out.
I'll let you bring it to the thank you.
Just in parting, you know, we've had outstanding leadership from our local agent, Lap Tedesco, for many, many years, and they constantly keep the board appraised in terms of what's going on, some of the best practices, why loss control is so important to reduce cost, and it's always a neat factor, as Supervisor Sanders said, to be able to reap the benefit from a good loss control measure and just a return on our investment. So it's certainly our employees has a lot to do with why we were able to receive such a nice refund. So, okay. Item number two is discussion and consideration of economic development process and policy. Supervisor Rick Sanders and Jessica Reynolds, Assistant County Attorney, have been working diligently for some time and bringing forth this information for our consideration today. So, welcome, Jessica.
Good morning.
Good.
I think I'll jump in and start. This has been a more complex process than I expected it to be when we all talked about, okay, now that we've established TIF, we've established the Urban Renewal Zone, we put forward the first three projects that we did, maybe only three, but definitely first three. We wanted to put together some guidelines and policies for how this board was going to conduct itself in regards to TIF, and hopefully setting a roadmap for future boards and how they were going to deal with TIF. Clearly, any board can do what it wants to do in terms of policies, but it at least would lay it out. So Jessica and I started working on it, and our first thought, since neither one of us liked to reinvent the wheel, was let's just find what other counties in Iowa specifically are doing with TIF and how that will work. And we came up with a big fat zero on what other counties are doing. If we put in some policies and processes, we will in fact be the first county in Iowa to have those. So we started looking other places. We relied on the expertise of Bob Johnston, who has been our advisor through this process, and started to lay out a framework that we hope will clearly relay to the public and those entities who would be interested in TIF what the process is, what kind of things this board would be interested in exploring TIFing, what kind of things we would not be interested in doing, and the process we would follow to evaluate all those things in the timeline. So there's the, I guess, the 30,000-foot overview of what this is. I just ask if you wanted to add anything to that, Jessica.
I would just say that this TIF process is fairly new to counties. Cities have used it for years, as you all are aware, and it's been available to counties, but I think that's the reason for the lack of county policies and procedures, and I would just applaud the board for having the foresight to consider the potential effects of TIF and to make something that really, you know, right now things are pretty subjective regarding TIF, and so to make this a more objective and specific approach, which is the intent of the policy.
Jessica, for both you and for Supervisor Sanders, for the last 4 years, the Iowa Association of Counties have actually been engaged in bringing this topic before the supervisors at its various schools, because whether it's been county-driven or cities, the fact that TIF does happen in many of their communities, but mostly have been spearheaded by cities. And as you know, the legislature has been talking about this for some time and questioning how some of the funds have been used, whether the projects probably was the appropriate use of TIF dollars, et cetera. And so there's been an ongoing discussion in this particular area. I'm aware that there are quite a number of counties now that are starting to take a look at this, particularly as it relates to wind energy and further expansion of wind energy and some other related issues. And one of the reasons that this is being looked at by other counties is because of the infrastructure needs and the funding that is lacking. As you know, there is a proposal have been discussed regarding what I call a user's fee, a road use tax fee for the gasoline tax. And as a result of that, without having that additional revenues, counties see a significant shortfall in their ability to maintain roads and bridges. And so this is one area that they are starting to take a look at if they can be able to capture some of the growth dollars and then apply it toward infrastructure needs. So we're going to probably see more and more discussion about this, and the fact that we are moving in this direction and trying to put forth a policy and procedure and a process, I'm sure other counties are going to want to look to us in terms of either lessons learned or whether they, can tweak what they're doing, et cetera. And I think, as Supervisor Sanders said, it's a lot easier when we can look out and find that others have gone down this path and have found a great deal of success. So Story County, this is not new to Story County to be a pioneer, by the way, in a lot of different areas. And I can't thank you enough for taking the lead on behalf of the board in this process and keeping it going, and with you, Jessica, working through this process. So I don't know if you want to kind of highlight a little bit about some of the goals, the ideas, the process that you've laid out. I read through it, and I know there's a couple of people in the audience who would like to comment regarding that. But I think the big issue, again, is the timing by which we review proposals each year, and the lack of a process, I think, is not a good practice. And so this is why I applaud, the effort that we are taking. And there may still need to be some tweaking. We don't know yet. But it's certainly something that I appreciate where we are today.
So, yeah, well, I mean, let's start right there. I fully expect that there's going to be some tweaking before I would ask that this board approve what's in front of us today. The intention of Jessica and I bringing it today was to make this draft as public as possible, to receive comments, to specifically get any direction from the two of you in things you might see in this. And then my hope is that we could come out of today with the direction that Paul share a finalized or a semi-finalized document. Jessica and I go back with whatever comments are made here today, whatever we can work on, and come up with what I would call a finalized draft that, Paul, I would ask that you would share with the Nevada Economic Development Commission, that I would share with the Ames Group, that I would share with the Story County Economic Development Group, that we share with any and all that are interested, make it as public as possible, with the hope of coming back next week and asking for some action moving ahead on something that's probably going to look pretty similar to this, maybe with some tweaks. I know Arden's got several, Mr. Griner's got several very specific concerns that I think this board would be well to hear and come to the conclusion of how we collectively see this. Very basically running through it, what this document attempts to do is it attempts to restrain the amount of available TIF dollars that can be used by any board. In other words, we would never go to 100%. It sets the maximum at 50% of available TIF revenues. It tries to very clearly define what kind of projects, primarily public projects, would be appropriate for TIF dollars. In other words, we're not going to go fund the building of a spec building, between Ames and Huxley as part of this. And then finally, it tries to clearly define what the process is for us to add new revenue-generating properties through the increment to the process. With that, I would love to hear whatever comments the public might have, and we can work through kind of refining this draft and moving on to the next draft.
Anything from you, Paul, at this point in time?
Well, I just appreciate the work that's been put in on this, and I've had a lot of people ask, what's the county going to do with this? And you get kind of tired of telling them, well, it's a working process, and this is a good it's a good point to get to, so we can finally come down to some finality and get it. Here's what we're going to do, and we can actually show this to somebody. This is what the county's policy is when it comes to TIF funds, and this is how we're going to operate. So,
okay. All right, good. Okay, with that, Jessica, anything else before we ask Mr. Griner to come forth? Okay, Arden, please come up, and we welcome you.
As Arden comes up, I'd just say he's been the most active of any of our citizens in regard to TIF. Has some very real and well-founded concerns. Arden and I find a lot of areas to agree on and a few areas to disagree on, but I think that everything he brings forward is something that we ought to highly consider collectively, because there's some very real concerns.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, and the timing's good, Wayne, to do it now. I've been talking with Rick a little bit off and on, and Rick's hit a couple of these concerns already, so I appreciate your listening and the considerations. I think you're opening up a real can of worms, this economic development. I'm associated with an organization where we got really active in economic development, a company, and after 10 years, our debt quadrupled, and none of the projects panned out. They were all complete failures. So, and two of them were wind towers. One was photo cells. We were involved in other projects. But anyhow, this is the best thing. I just threw this together at the last minute last night. I found this. Let's scroll down here to where the third, fourth paragraph. There are several ways tax increment financing can go wrong. Most importantly, nothing prevents the city from diverting tax revenue from school districts and the county long after the city's investment is paid off. In Coralville, the project was paid off. They took the additional money, $18 million they give Von Maur to move across the city from once shopping center to the other. Now, there's no economic development there. If it helped one shopping center, it hurt the other one just as much. So, but Rick has addressed this, that after the project is over, it would be over. The tax takings wouldn't stay there to be used for other purposes. But their solution is here. It's important to reform is to simply prohibit the diversion of revenue beyond the repayment of the project costs. For the new project, the tax increment would reflect an updated base year. Okay, the second thing that could go wrong is the TIF diversion create a new tax base. Will it actually create a new tax base? Then the Dakin's Lake project, the base itself is not going to be, I don't think Dakin's Lake can ever be taxed. That's off the tax rolls. So you're hoping that some economic development will help from that. But originally, TIF was set up like if you were going to build a bridge to a Walmart. Well, the Walmart would be such a huge tax generator that it's worth several times what the bridge would cost. So you're supposed to weigh the economic development. The payback is actually going to be larger in increasing the tax base. And so you need to use that for one of your crux, that there's actually a positive payback. Demand that the TIF projects expand the tax base and or limit the percent of the city or tax base that can be TIFed. Now, you're talking about limit it to 50%, but this is just a policy. This could change next week, next month, next year. I think what we're talking here, we'll go on with this. The third problem is when a TIF district covers parts or more than one school district. One of the largest TIF areas in Iowa is the Coral Ridge Mall. It's split between two school boundaries. As a result, millions of TIF revenue every year are diverted from the Clear Creek Amana School District and used to develop property in the Iowa City School District. Clear Creek Amana gives up the revenue but will see no return. An easy fix: allow no TIF area to span a school district border. If the project spills into a second district, set up two TIF areas. That's very clear and very succinct. Clear Creek Amana School District, up to 48% of their taxable property is in TIF districts. Other places, there's over 40% of the entire tax base of a school district is in TIF. I mean, this can snowball way out of control real fast. I mean, I think you're playing with fire here. Back to the fourth problem. Well, the fourth way, and tax incentives provide a project that would have proceeded anyway. Now, you're leaving Vetters, I don't know, it's an unusual thing. Glenn Vetters owned that property for several years to build a property there. The fact that you're TIFing to do a road, it would have been built anyhow. Your project for the bike trail south of town here, I think there's a second source of funding. I mean, aren't the property owners going to be assessed?
There's four sources
of funding.
Right, we would be a part of it.
And so the TIF would be like $200,000 or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the project would have went ahead anyhow. So you guys are just using this money for Santa Claus, you know, just to spice up or maybe to help. But the project, I think, would have went ahead anyhow without the TIF.
On that one, I think, Vetter, you're dead on. I think that with the bike path, without the county's participation, without any of the four groups' participation, it wouldn't have gone ahead. So I don't think it's accurate to say that that project would move ahead without county participation.
The county have other funds, conservation funds or something for the bike trail? Okay. Okay, the solution for this is allow TIF for retail and residential property only in blight areas. Where is the economic development area? Or the, where is the urban renewal zone that's been designated for this TIF?
It's attached to our urban renewal plan. Yep. And
defined by the property.
It's specific to the project.
Yeah.
In other words, Arden, in order to do any project other than what we've done, right now in our urban renewal zone, and you just correct me if I'm wrong here, every one of the wind towers sits in that zone. Vetter Construction sits in that zone. The Dakins Lake property sits in that zone. And Country Club Road sits in that zone. And in order for this board to do any other TIF projects, we would have to go back and amend that urban renewal zone in order to be able to either add property to the TIF district or to do a project within that zone. So it's not as simple as we just decide one day that, oh, we want to do this. We'd have to go through the entire public process of adding a new project or a new property.
I read somewhere where urban renewal zone automatically makes a TIF, but TIFs can be done without urban renewal. I thought you took a blighted area of the city, and that was your urban renewal zone. And then you took a TIF area, you know, where there's growth, and you'd use the additional tax revenue from there to work on the urban renewal zone. That's why I'm asking where the urban renewal zone
is. Or even better, I mean, when it was set up, Arden, even better was to take that blighted area, TIF it, and use the expected increase in tax revenue, the increment from the improvements that you make, to pay off. So for example, in Ames, the North Grand Mall, if you were to declare the North Grand Mall an urban renewal zone and spend TIF dollars to improve it, in fact, the tax base would raise on and around the mall, and you would use that to pay yourself back.
Where would the TIF dollars come from, the original TIF dollars, though? They've got to come from somewhere else. Where's the TIF dollars? Where's it going to come from?
The expected assessment. Okay, so the mall, let's say that the mall was going to grow.
Yeah.
Right. The no different than Vetter building their property, building that building, and the difference in tax revenue that we can expect from when that was ag property, and I think we were getting $80,000 a year, or it was assessed at $80,000 a year, and now it's assessed at over $2 million with the building, or it's going on the rolls, it's assessed over $2 million.
If you've already got the development there.
Yeah.
But the example of North Grand Mall, if the development's not there yet, you can't.
But Arden, why wouldn't the city use the process of TIF if that was the direction they wanted to go rather than it being the county TIF?
Exactly.
You see, and
this is the
now, we did have one other issue similar to this, but it wasn't really called TIF, but it was designated as an urban renewal area because of the doll store in the city of Ames. There was a provision that allowed them to go forward and be able to receive a tax incentive by relocating there based on the fact that this area had run down. There had been a store there many years ago, and it was no longer currently operating, and there were a lot of other stores in the North Grand area that was being vacated. And so all the criteria was addressed and met, and the board moved forward after reviewing that, and then they were able to purchase, this land. But this was not something that was done with TIF dollars. And I think if I heard Supervisor Sanders correctly, and based on kind of where we're going, you're probably correct in say that future boards could probably include other things in the equation. I think this board is trying to be extremely very careful about the projects that we would approve, and make sure that they, what I call, meet the smell test of what the intent with TIF was designed to do. And at the same time, we want to be very cognizant of the fact that we're not holding a particular municipality or school district to great harms based on how those dollars are basically being used. And I think part of the ongoing discussion earlier on was talking about whether the state would backfill school districts for lost revenue. And again, this is an area that we, as a board, or any future board, hopefully would need to constantly be aware of in terms of if the growth dollars that is being captured from the TIF funds would have a negative impact on that school district. And I think that would be a discussion if and when it would come up. And so I do think that what the issue that you've raised is certainly one that we should be thinking about and having deliberations on as we begin to move forward with the process, so that we're clear in terms of what this board's priorities are. Now, not to say that other boards may take it in a different direction, but we can only deal with what the powers that lie within us. But I think you have done.
Wayne, let's just be clear on that point, because it's a good point that Arden makes, and I really appreciate his stance that we're opening a can of worms, I think, is what you said. That can of worms is already open. I mean, we've already established the TIF district. We've already established the urban renewal zone. It's already out there. My question going forward is, do we want policies that would, in fact, bind this board? I mean, if we're the board that approves them, then this board is not going to turn around and go back on them. May not bind future boards, but it at least makes future boards, they would have to do something publicly in order to change whatever policies we put forward.
The policy, they would have to
and
go
so all
the
I'm
process.
Suggesting is we've opened the can of worms. We made that decision a year ago. Now, are we going to have rules by which we deal with this can of worms that we've opened? And that's what I'm trying to establish here. Arden, I want you to continue, but there's one idea that you and I talked about yesterday that I haven't heard you mention yet that I want to make sure you mention before we finish up here. Okay.
This can of worms, it's open. Now what we need to do is limit the damage, because there's going to be damage here, a lot of collateral damage. So that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, to the Colonesco School District, you're basically, we're footing the bill for this entire thing. To use the example, we've got 123 wind towers in the Colonesco School District, luckily, and this is supposed to be our revenue stream for the future, you know, for the next 20 years. And then to lump it together with two over here at Nevada and say it's okay to spend all this money all over the county is absurd. You know, we already crossed this line up here that the project should not span out of a school district. So the money that's in the Colonesco School District should stay in the Colonesco School District.
There hasn't been anything approved yet that is different than that.
Right. But let's keep it that way.
Well,
I mean, you know, we can't take all this. The Colonesco School District, when we get good teachers, we lose them to Gilbert or to Ames. I didn't realize that other school districts pay a lot more. I thought school districts were pretty equal in pay, but they're not. Gilbert and Ames pay a lot more for their teachers, but a lot better than Colonesco. These wind towers are supposed to help. You know, this is our economic development. This is our future here. And you guys are going to, you can subvert all this, what, $30 million in the next 20 years that this board has the power to take and to spend on whatever your whim is. There is no requirement. All you guys got to do is raise your hand. Whatever whim you have that day, this money can be spent. This whole $30 million could be spent by this December. And it's taken out of here. And we can't keep good teachers over there because we can't pay them because we don't have the infrastructure that the west side of the county does. So that's the absurdity of this whole situation.
Okay, but explain to me how having no policy is going to solve the problem you just laid out.
The problem? No, you're working at limiting the policy. That's a good thing. But the can of worms is open. Let's limit the damage.
Well, and as you know, Arden, you and I just fundamentally disagree on that one point of that TIF automatically has to be abused just by the virtue of being TIF. We also disagree on whether there can be benefit to an area of the county when dollars are spent in some other school district. Can it positively impact? I mean, you and I just fundamentally disagree on that. Where we absolutely agree is that if you're not careful, TIF can get away from you. There's no, I mean, the things you lay out here, what Coralville and Iowa City are doing to each other, it's 100% accurate. And that's what we have really tried hard to limit here. The one thing that I don't limit here that I think I hear you pushing really strongly for, and again, it's just because I have a fundamental disagreement with you, is the idea that school boundaries should dictate TIF districts when this is a county program.
Right.
And again, that's just an area that you and I come down on different sides.
But up until now, all the TIF districts in the county were cities. I mean,
right.
So there was no problem with crossing
right.
school districts.
Right.
This is what you admit. This is one of the first counties in the state that's doing this. You guys are breaking new ground here. And you give the example yesterday where, okay, we could take all this money and build an industry could come into Ames. And the benefit to the Colonesco School District was a few people there might get jobs. But where's the tax base? The tax base for that new industry that's going to be built in Ames is in Ames. The tax base is not in the Colonesco School District. Going back to this example of building the bridge to Walmart, you're supposed to use TIF funds to build the tax base of the area.
Yeah, and see, that's where
But see, Veterans is not building the tax base. Sorry to interrupt you.
Veterans
is not building the tax base. The building's already there. You know, I don't think you can justify even Dagan's Lake. You're not building the tax base.
Right, and Arden,
there's not
this is the conversation we need to have.
There's not an industry that's going to fall into Dagan's Lake that's going to build a huge facility there that's going to really increase the tax.
No, but those, see, this is where you and I are moving along pretty good together, and then this is where we get apart. That Dakin's Lake, having 30 nice campsites up there that are going to be used for 4 months out of the year, people that would not otherwise ever venture up to Northeast Story County, where are they going to spend their dollars? What does that do to the tax base? What does that do to the value of the buildings around Dakin's Lake? What happens if a new subdivision goes in on some of the other property that Dakin's owns? What happens to the tax base then? One. Two, the lady who cuts my hair, I get my hair cut in Ames, she lives in Colo. You're telling me that there's no advantage to Colo, that she has a good job and owns a house in Colo? And the example I gave you is, let's say that all of this positioning and posturing between Nevada and Ames comes to fruition, and Ames does in fact annex all the way out to 590th, and they start to put in a big industrial park with large lots. And one of the things that the county is asked to do is maybe pave a road or do some little infrastructure stuff. If we establish this, we're not spending any money at all helping companies relocate, helping them come in, giving them tax abatements, doing anything like that. So let's say we put in a road as our part of participating in economic development, and we get 300 jobs out of this new industrial park, and 30 of those people live in the Colonesco School District with small families. They buy houses over there. They spend money over there. That's where they spend their weekends. That's where their kids go to school. You're telling me that doesn't have a positive economic impact over there? I think it does.
Where's the tax base being built, though? The tax base is being built over where the facility is that you're building.
If 10%.
Soon go to Polk County and Hardin County.
Some of them could. Right.
Well, I mean, just to throw out a net that says everybody gains and there's a job.
First of all, the discussion and that we are having right now is not typical. The give and take back and forth between us. This was not a public forum type of presentation type thing, but we felt because you have really gone out of your way on many occasions to come and visit with us, and particularly with Rick, regarding this process, that it was important that your concerns be public. And this is the reason that we're going. But so I think what we have here is I think both of you have arrived at a point where there is disagreement in terms of that one particular philosophy that you have. We have certainly heard your concern. I think we would be remiss if we would try to have moved forward as if to say that what you have brought to our attention need to be discounted. And I think we made a mistake 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. You had requested some notification when we were starting to move forward, and somehow that didn't take place. We've made every effort to not see that happened again. And so we do appreciate you being here. We do appreciate your comments and so forth. But at this point, I think what you have now is just a dialogue back and forth between the two of you. Paul and I have not really kind of weighed in on that, so we're actually listening to both of you for the first time. And I think both of you have some very valid points that we need to factor in as we move forward in this endeavor. So
I wanted the two of you to hear this conversation, but Art, I'd ask you to move now to the advisory board suggestion that you had, because I want them to hear that as well, and I want Jessica to hear that.
Glad you brought that up, Wayne. You know, I, the school board president, and others wanted to be notified a year ago before you formed this district, and we weren't notified. And it was, well, I think you approved it on the day after Thanksgiving. The deadline was December 1st, so it was run through rather rapidly. And none of us, I never saw any notifications on any hearings or anything on this economic development, TIF district being formed. I ran by Rick here a month ago. Well, when I was here the last time, I said I think there should be a because two of you supervisors are on economic development boards. Maybe, Rick, you're on two. You're on Nevada's. You're on Ames and the counties. It's a conflict of interest for you guys to sit on an economic development board who might be proposing projects to use this money. And then you are also making the decisions where to spend the money. So I think you need to appoint a citizens committee on who to make the recommendations to you on how this money should be spent, to analyze closely the projects and their worth, their actual return to if the value is returned back to the county. And in thinking about this more so, I think this district, this citizens committee needs to be from the Colonesco School District, because it is our tax money. It's our money that's being spent here. And it wouldn't be fair to do it any other way. This is $30 million that who's going to, you know, that's got to be made up by somebody somewhere. And so that's my proposal. I'm glad that Rick, you know, has agreed to limit maybe to 50% the amount of money that's going to be used in this TIF. And a lot of unanswered questions. The backfill is, okay, I'm going to throw out $30 million because that's what's available. Now, you're going to say you're only going to use $15 million, but the next board could go for the whole 30. 53% of my tax bill goes to the school district. Okay, that the state's going to backfill this up to $15 million that's TIFed
The portion that the school board loses will be made up by the state up to $5.40
per thousand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the current tax in Coal Onesco is 14, higher than that.
1441. Yeah, but part of that is PEPL and things that are going to continue to grow anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Figure it about half and half, all said and done. It's about $12 in levy from the Coal Onesco and okay. $5.40 that if we took the full 100%. But here's the deal. The $5.40, as I understand it, applies across the board. So you're talking about next year, just in round numbers, guys, if there was no such thing as TIF, if these wind towers just came online and we had never TIFed anything, the Coal Onesco School District would receive an increase in tax dollars of $430,000 year over year. And with the TIF, if we were to use the full 50% that we lay out here, their increase would go from $430,000 next year to $400,000 next year. I mean, so that, to me, that's the increment that you're talking about. That is Coal Onesco's skin in the game. And I don't, you're talking about increase. I mean, we're starting to sound like the federal government where cutting an increase is somehow a cut. I mean, it's still an increase, and it's just a question of what level that increase is.
Let's use the figure. It grows over the first 7 years before it gets to be the maximum. So like 2016, 2017, yeah. What's the maximum on the school district?
I haven't. I just looked at the 1 year just to get started.
Couple times larger than that.
Right, but so is.
Only 1%. What?
Yeah, but that $164,000. As long as the state keeps that, and there's a conversation that needs to be had as well. As long as the state keeps the backfill, that $5.40 continues. That $164,000 continues to grow as well.
In discussions, the state stopping the backfill onto the schools.
No formal discussion.
No formal.
Yeah. The total amount comes to $1.8 million per year after year seven or whatever.
That sounds about right. Lisa, does that sound about right? Yeah.
Yep. So the school district, if the state doesn't backfill,
right,
the school district will lose $1 million a year. 53%, 54%.
If you were TIFing at 100%, and the state did not backfill, again, it depends on how you define lose. This is an increase in revenue to schools. There's not anything. The school budget is set as it is, and it's only going to grow. The question is, how much is it going to grow?
So, okay. Now, in theory, you can't take, once we have a windfall, economic development, if you take it from us, when can we ever grow? I mean, this is
you are growing. This is a conversation.
Well, this again, I think it's helpful for us to understand where your conversation has been going. And
let's continue back with the sheet.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't mind. Okay. On the second page, second paragraph down there, the fourth way. Allow for TIF. Okay. You shouldn't be using TIF for residential. You shouldn't be using it for greenfield sites. I think that Dagan's Lake would be that. You got to be careful that if the project would go through anyhow, like Vetters or whatever, you're giving this money away for no reason at all. Finally, TIF goes wrong when it's used to pirate tax base from neighboring communities. This is not economic development. The solution down to the bottom of that paragraph, eliminate the loopholes in the current anti-piracy status. There was a huge bill pushed in this Iowa legislature this last year to put severe limitations on TIF, and it didn't go anywhere because the two houses of the legislature couldn't decide on anything. TIF started back in California years ago, and I don't think anyone wants our county to end up like the municipalities are in California today. I mean, you've got to allow the tax base to grow. You just can't use it all up. There again, 123 towers. This tax base is all coming out of Coal Onesco School District. On the county portion, we were talking yesterday that if Coal Onesco loses the potential valuation in this TIF district, doesn't the county portion of the
property tax have to be increased in the Colonesco School District, not countywide, because we have to pull our share. So the county portion,
we don't have a levy from the county that just impacts Colonesco.
Right.
The only things that do that to you are the township,
right.
The local school is countywide, right. and so then just the Colonesco School District. That's the only things. What we said here at a county applies countywide. So
rough figures, out of $30 million, $10 million would be going to the county. The county has to raise their valuation. If they use the whole amount, the county would have to raise their valuation $10 million over the next 20 years to make up for this money if it's allotted over 20 years.
Let's just use next year. Next year, the county's, if there was no such thing as TIF, the county's revenues based on those 123 wind farms would have gone up $300,000 year over year. If we use the full half, the county's revenues will only go up $150,000 based on those wind towers. So it's going up, and this is at a time where this board has cut spending by $3 million over the last 3 years. So it's only, I don't want it to be viewed that we're reaching in and taking something that's already there. This is revenues that don't exist yet, and all it's doing is saying, okay, you're going to take part, this one's going to take part, and we're creating this new part over here for economic development. And we can go round and round all day long of whether economic development has any value or not. I tend to believe that smart economic development can have value. I believe that the county has a role to play in that, and this is the mechanism that I believe makes the most sense for the county to play.
Can we discuss that? You say this is taking revenues that aren't there yet.
They aren't there yet.
Well, okay, the towers are built in 08 and 09.
Right.
The towers are there.
They have not come on the rolls yet. Or the 123 are just coming on the rolls.
Just came on the road for this year. Yeah, and that's the way they're set up. That's part of the abatement process or whatever.
Okay. Revenue that Colonesco School District has never seen.
Okay, and never will. But the countywide TIF district is going to be your biggest problem, because taking up until now, it was cities. It stayed local. When you guys start taking money from over here and spending it over there, there's going to be some major problems. I hope you
over there? What county is right over there?
When you start taking money from the Colonesco School District,
What county do you live in? Story. What county is Ames in? Story. What county is Story City in? Story.
So where are you going to tip the Gilbert School District, the Ames School District, the Huxley School District?
Could.
Well, but you're not.
Arden.
So you're taking our windfall, and you guys are going to spend our windfall. Let's leave it.
I think we've both heard the last comment. Please have
these economic development boards in Nevada, Ames. These are professional people. We don't have anybody like that in the Colonesco School District. Professional economic development boards. You guys are going to be coming in here with teams of horses. With projects to spend this money in the next month or two or three before the end of the year. And we can't compete on that side, especially when you guys are sitting on those boards. That's why we need to have a Citizens Advisory Committee, and I also think that they need to be from the Colonesco School District or where these monies are being derived from. Definitely. Otherwise, I think there's potential problems down the road when you're subverting this money.
There's a lot of economic development on the west side of this.
Arden, I can't thank you enough for being here and for sharing your views. We really do appreciate it. Okay, Loris Olson.
Loris, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Everybody have a good day, I hope. Okay. Loris Olson, 1705 Buchanan Avenue in Ames. And I have a little more to say than I originally did because of this discussion. I would like to urge the gentleman and the board to go back and review the specifics of school financing, okay? It was a little frustrating for me as an ex-journalist who's covered the school board for the last decade to listen to part of the conversation, because the state limits how much money per pupil can be spent for general budget for a school district. So when you referenced about paying teachers as long as your school district is taxing and spending the $5,450 per student allowed by the state, okay, that extra revenue can only be used that you're talking about for capital improvements. And so really it would end up being property tax relief for you guys. It's not extra money when it comes to your general fund. It's property tax relief. You will pay less per dollar. Okay? So I encourage you to do that. So I'm going to head to my second point here, was I heard Mr. Sanders say that he'd like to bring this back next week. And it is unfortunate that the only media now covering the school board is not here today, although it's great how quickly those audios go up online, so we often see coverage on Thursday, okay, then. But this is a complicated issue, as already explained. And if you don't have any applications on the table, I would ask that you take more time with this. I understand from the way the policy lays out your schedule, if you've got a pending application, I understand you want to move forward. But if you have the extra time to maybe produce some charts, to produce some information on school district funding, I think that you will be able to engage the community better in all over the county, in the effect that when you go forward, you're going to end up having other school districts maybe interested in this. Okay. What I was going to say originally, I have covered TIFs for 20 years in other states and other school districts, and I've seen it, and while counties have only recently gotten it, it's been a while for cities, I've seen it work. And more than anything else, it comes down to your county board or your city council, whatever, having a very clear vision of what they will and won't do. And I think the majority of this policy is absolutely wonderful. And I think it's proactive, and you're right. You're going to tweak it, new boards or same board. I mean, situations will come up. I actually would just like to talk about number four on here, about no money going to private business. TIFs were designed truly to benefit a large project development. Okay, that's really what they were designed for. But we've got opportunities, I believe, in the county moving forward to go ahead and do mini projects, mini grants. You can look to the city of Ames. Sorry to bring up Ames again, but they have the facilities facade, downtown facade project. And they will match 50% if someone wants to improve their facade. We've got a county committee just starting on looking at internet connections and internet broadband availability within the county, okay? And it might be after that survey is done, we discover that there could be some actual need not only to provide an infrastructure, but maybe there are some small businesses in Story County who, with a $5,000 grant from the county, could pay for professional development of a website, for example, and double, triple, 10 times their market. And as a small business owner myself, I know how much $5,000 is, okay? And it can make a big difference to a small business person. And those are small increments. The other thing is that if you look at never, ever giving a little bit of money to a private business, what do we do if we have a private or a grassroots effort that comes up that proposes a development project that isn't among your traditional one with what one of the economic development groups would come forward. But yet, it clearly meets the rest of the guidelines, but it's going to have to go directly to a business. Okay, so I would like to look at, I think this policy is pretty good, but I'd like for you to look at, maybe with a percentage limit in that part or whatever, is saying you don't give major money to a private business or whatever, but that's the only part of it that I think could maybe use a tweak, or you could use some more comments on.
And that's a very valid point, Lars, and we do appreciate that. As was earlier stated, and I guess I would have to probably say that both Rick and Paul have engaged the county a lot further in terms of what role we can play in a broader scope in economic development than what we've done in the past. In the past, it was primarily the cities that was the driving engine, and the county was just notified that this is, you know, what we plan to do. As federal funding and changes that are happening throughout the nation from federal to state to local, entities like ours are realizing that as a county, that if we can develop some partnerships in public-private entities, we have a much better chance not only of bringing in business and industries to broaden our tax base, but to also improve the overall quality of life. So it is important for us to be at the table, and this is initially what we are doing right at the present time. And this past summer, Supervisor Sanders was unable to attend the trip to Washington, D.C., so I went to represent the county, and it was never more valuable. I mean, it was very valuable to me to sit there with the city of Ames, the university, and the economic development folks talking about the projects and the things that the federal government could assist with, provided they were very much aware of it. And while what came from that was it was a coordinated collaborative effort showing that the county is also in support of our cities. And we would be the same thing if it was Story City, if it was Colonesco, or any of the other communities that had a project or a proposal that needed us to vet our congressional delegation, that we as a county representative would want to be at the table. We would want to be part of that discussion to make sure that they see this as, if it benefits, say, the city of Ames or Nevada or Colonesco, it's going to benefit the entire county. And that indirect benefit is something that we've not really engaged in the past that we are wanting to look at. So as I said earlier, as we go through this, this is why the input is so important. But up until this point, even when we did announce it and went through all of our publication notifications, we've only had two other individuals come and actually voice a concern regarding this. And so while you're saying that maybe more time would be helpful dealing with the school finance portion of it, I think we are cognizant of what the school finance portion would be, but I'm not saying that that's what needs to take place in terms of us moving forward with considering the preliminary draft policy that we currently have here. This still will allow us to address those things as time go on, but I think you raise a very valid point, and I do appreciate, you know, that. Anything else, by the way?
I'd like to, if I could, just address those things, because, Loris, it was something, the points you raised were all things that Jessica and I considered and kind of batted back and forth as we put this through, and so I'd like to just address them. First of all, timing, we do have two informal projects that have been requested. They have not been requested through the process because we don't have a process, but we've got two very clearly, 600th and 530th north of 190th, that we've got to make a decision on. The people in good faith have been here requesting those. We've put them off saying we're trying to get a process. So we owe it to them to get to the end of this and give them a decision one way or another. So that's on timing. The idea of city revitalization or things like that, Main Street, I don't think we eliminate the possibility of that here. It just would not be dealing directly with business owner or building owner. It would be dealing with that city who would have a program, and maybe we could help with that. So that's the other one there. And then finally, this idea of no rebates or anything to a private entity. I just want to, very carefully, the way we worded that, Story County will not use TIF funds to participate in any direct disbursement or rebate. I don't believe that's an appropriate use of TIF. I'm not suggesting that the county wouldn't participate in something like that. If we so choose, we just wouldn't do it with TIF funds. I mean, we currently budget, right now it's $100,000 a year that goes through the Story County Economic Development Group, which is used on exactly what you're referring to, and so I could see that.
Might I bring up an additional point? Would that be appropriate? And not start a debate here so much. One of the things that will happen, though, is that depending on how you do create these TIF districts, there's likelihood that there will be some small businesses, especially rural. I'm thinking about our small organic farmers, et cetera, okay, who might find themselves in a TIF district and might want to go ahead and have access to some of this economic development money, but every property improvement they make is going to get dumped back into the TIF. And so we're taxing about 18% right now on everybody, typically on a tax bill. And if we go up to your 50% limit, which I think is a very admirable limit, self-restraint, you've got 30% there that the county could still pull in. Okay, and the small business owner is never, we're still going to stay just with that $100,000 out of the general fund. So maybe, let's say, you'll do 2% in small projects of your $50,000 in TIF, and you allow under that situation, okay? Because right now, anytime you put anybody in a TIF district and it's bigger than just the project, you've limited any growth for there and any growth into the general fund. And so you've got a flat base to do any kind of expanded projects or funding of small projects through that. And so that's where I'm after.
If you don't grow, what you said is exactly right, if you don't grow the 100,000 that's in the general fund.
Correct. And I was trying to find a way to grow that 100,000.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment, Lars. Okay, any other public comments regarding this topic? Jessica, back to you. Anything to add as you've listened to the conversation back and forth?
Just related to TIF, we are coming to some deadlines that I want to make sure the board's aware of. We need to incur debt and then certify that debt by December 1st of this year for the current projects. And the board needs to decide if they want to add any other projects, as Mr. Sanders mentioned. Our current urban renewal plan has the approval of $3.185 million, which is to cover the current projects that have been approved. So the board needs to decide how much debt they want to incur, the debt mechanism that they want to use, if they want to bond, what they want to do regarding that. And that needs to be all decided, and the debt needs to be incurred so that we can certify that on December 1st. So I would just remind the board of that. Those are some decisions that are going to need to be made by all of you.
Right, and I would just amend that to say, since we approved the $100,000 increase in our participation along Country Club Road, instead of being 3.185, now it's 3.285. There's already $500,000 of that the county loaned itself into the TIF district that we've got to consider paying back. So I believe if we don't approve any other projects, that we're looking at 3.285. Lisa, is that right? 3.285 that we need to look at. Jessica has done the legwork on looking at some bonding rates right now with an effective rate of 1.44%. I have really been pushing to look at other funding mechanisms, but when your effective rate is 1.44% on a 10-year bond with a payment that comes in much less than the 50% that we would limit ourselves to, it comes in at $270,000 a year payment on that full amount, I think we need to look very seriously at that. And so those are the things that I would like us to get on the agenda for next week and come back and try to make some decisions so that we can start moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to
thank
both
Jessica.
Of you. And thank you. Good. Okay. Interesting topic.
Good stuff, man. That was the conversation we needed, Wayne. Thanks for letting it go on, even though it was outside normal protocol.
Okay, then moving on to item 3 is discussion and consideration of quotes from Carpet 1 for carpet replacement in the Human Service Center. Facility Director Al Hahn, the cost is estimated at $52,442.68.
Morning.
Can't believe you're retiring. I'm so mad about
I'm old.
That.
Old.
Yeah, you are.
Before you leave, when you're done, I want to talk to you about this memo that we got here on something.
Is that real estate stuff?
Something that Terry sent Yeah.
Yeah, I filled that out. That's, we did that years, 20 years ago.
Right.
And prices have gone up. where am I? Carpet.
Carpet.
We got $12,000 in the budget. Now, the email I sent to you, we had 23 extra thousand in there. That's kind of a typo. We realized we don't have that in there. It was taken out. But we did put $58,000 in the budget. We got $79,000 in there right now. $12,000 of that is earmarked for DHS carpet. When you look at DHS, if you go through there and you figure out that we got to put carpet in that building, the only real true answer is using carpet tile like we did downstairs in community services. And, of course, a little more labor intensive. A little more money because it's a the carpet manufacturers, of course, know that, you know, it's the easiest way and it's the best way because if you do get a flaw in the carpet, you can tear out a little area like that. And so we definitely want to go that direction. Now, $12,000 is going to be enough to do half of that DHS. It is needed. The carpet is in many places concrete is almost showing, you know, it's becoming a trip hazard for those people. To say at best to change out the carpet in there is going to be a major project. I mean, our department's going to be very busy during the day just trying to move stuff out of the way for the guys to come in at night and do a small section at a time. So I also looked at the county attorney's carpet and they're about in the same position. Not knowing what's going to happen back in that area with construction or remodel or anything like that, but they do. They also need the replacement of carpet. I believe next year that we should put in monies for juvenile court. It'll be ready probably in 18 months for carpet replacement. And also, I don't know what we're going to do with Deb's old area up in community services on the second floor. DHS is definitely needed. I think that's the most important one right now to try to get that out of the way. We do have it in the budget. Like I said, I left $12,000 in there as budgeted, but it's not enough. We do have money in that we put in there from the $58,000. So we got to do it. We either got to do it this year or next year. So we either got to put money in next year's fund or use the funding that we have.
And this is just for the DHS area.
Yeah, this is the $39,700 is DHS and $12,700 is county attorney.
So are you thinking of maybe considering both of them, which would still be within the dollars that are in the current budget?
Yeah, I think we can still make both of those work depending on how much more remodeling we need to do or have planned to do.
Okay. Would you also, as you've indicated here, and you've mentioned several things that are probably a year away from consideration as well, kind of put together a little sheet for us in terms of what you see with the life cycle of those particular replacement things,
right.
So that we can begin to make sure that as we start the budget for next year as well, that we've got, you know, that clearly on the radar, and I think will really help us as we move forward. Questions to Al regarding this, whether the likelihood that if we waited to the first of the year, cost-wise, I guess I'm looking at, is part of your staff going to be the ones that are pretty much doing this? Is this going to be something done by whoever the carpet company that we purchase from?
The company will do the install and the tear-up. Our staff will do a lot of the moving. The one thing good about this is you still have to move movable things, but like the desks and the modular furniture and stuff, they can lift that up and then put the new carpet under it, where when you buy a carpet in a 15-foot roll, you got to have an open area to do that. So, but it will be extremely busy during the day. A couple guys, maybe even three, doing that in preparation for the night crew to come in. If we left it all up to carpet one to do, it'd be a whole bunch more money.
Yeah, my feeling is we should go ahead and do DHS. It needs to get done. It's sitting on its own floor. Let's get it done. I would prefer to hold off on county attorney and see where we end up. We've still got that dead space that Al and I think in the next day or so, you and I are
going to get over there
and look through that and try to come back with some kind of recommendation of where we're headed. But since we're talking about doing juvenile court next year anyway, which is right next door to the county attorney, I think I'd just soon hold off on that one, plan on putting it as part of the budget for next year, understanding that we need to get it done, and let's go ahead and tackle one of these at a time, which would be the main floor in DHS.
DHS is definitely a biggie. Right. Get that one out of our hair, we'll be good.
We need a motion for that. I would agree with that. If let's kind of, I guess at this point, maybe piecemeal it and do what we need to do, and we can have that discussion again in January.
Yeah. Well, and I'll go one step further. Selfishly, I want to try to make sure that we have some time built in the last couple months of Al's time with us, that if we decide to do some in-house work on that second floor dead space right there,
right,
that he and his guys have time to go ahead and tackle that. So I don't want to put too much on their plate. I just soon go ahead and get this DHS one done and then be ready to move on if we have any other plans that we want to do. So I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to move forward for the DHS portion for carpet replacement. Any further comments or
DHS carpet is $39,729.61.
Okay. So we have a motion and second. No further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
Do we want to talk about that, Wayne, or do you want to wait till...
If you're probably aware of this one sheet that came up. I was kind of caught off guard, not really sure what they really wanted, since we don't, and I visited with Lisa regarding this, and we're not paying, receiving any funds for rent there.
Right, it's just a comparison as to what it would cost if they did have to rent retail space. Or commercial space in Ames, Iowa. Lisa, I don't know. Can you know any more about it than that? I don't think it has anything to do with our reimbursement.
Right. Well, that's the only question that I was concerned with.
I don't.
You know, Lisa, remember when I came in the other day and we discussed this briefly with you, and it was a building maintenance request, and it just appears to be just an estimate as to what it would cost if we would rent out that facility. That area, you know, and they caught it.
Yeah, the initial correspondence I had that I forwarded on to Al was what's the per square per foot.
Right, and then this is with the initial.
So now they want to. Okay, my understanding is there is some reimbursement reflected. No, they use these rates for their DHS reimbursements. For the LAE, every year when the state or when the auditor comes in and does a comparison of square footage and such, and then some of that goes on to the quarterly LAE reimbursement.
Well, Al, could we call and see if we can get a little bit more clarity in this particular area?
I
have no problem with going ahead signing, but I just didn't want to sign it without if there was some questions unanswered regarding does it have an impact in terms of the reimbursement dollars that we get, and since this has been 20 years since we've had to do it.
They haven't asked for a long time. Quote.
Okay.
For a long time. So
used to be
should be worth more with new carpet, shouldn't it?
I would hope so. Okay. Like about $39,700. I had Terry call several area retailers, and those are average numbers for what, you know, office space in Ames, Iowa, including utilities, and yeah, and really, I mean, that's still cheap because we still offer them maintenance and custodial. So
okay, all right,
still getting a good deal.
Well, just to, yeah, just look at it and then get back to me, and then we can go ahead and move forward with that.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Al.
Thank you. All righty. Then moving on to consideration of agreement between Associate Computer System Limited and Information Technology for individual delivery of hardware performance of service. So Barbara Steinbeck, our new IT director, welcome.
I don't know if you've had time to go over the agreement. It looks to me like it's just a standard operating kind of cover all your bases, protect both parties type of agreement. It doesn't bind us to any dollar amount. I think what it does is it states the obvious, so there's no questions. ACS wants to protect their property as far as the technology they use to work on issues with us and the people that come and do that for us. ACS is a big one that they want to make sure they protect their employees so that we don't make an offer under the table like come work for us kind of thing. So this kind of spells everything out. And when doing their annual due diligence, they discovered Story County has never signed one of these. It's standard for all of their customers to sign this agreement. It's not just indicative to Story County. So she sent it over to me, and I said, well, I need to have the board take a peek at it.
What do they do for it? What does ACS do for us?
Currently, they're working on the CLIP application for CLP. What they had done in the past, they moved all the Lotus Notes data from the old AS400 system when we retired that. I think that was earlier in the year, and we spent about $90,000 doing that. So that's what they do for us. They offer subsidiary IT support, mostly programming and really nothing hardware-related, mostly just software. They're writing the program for CLP right now, which I think we're almost done with.
And Jessica, have you had a chance to look at this? Is this something that we need you to look at?
No. No, it's pretty standard.
For the other thing anyway, so.
Yeah.
I think if Jessica can look at it, and if it's okay, it would be appropriate maybe for the consent agenda next week.
Yeah, I would say based on if Jessica has no concerns, then just stick this on the consent agenda next week, but just defer action to next week.
Okay.
Sounds good. It doesn't appear like it obligates us to anything, but I'd like to have Jessica take another peek at it.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Okay. I know. The next is consideration of the 2080 agreement between the counties of Polk, Story, and Boone, and the following cities of Ankeny, Des Moines, Pleasant Hills, Alleman, Slater, Bondurant, Altoona, Elkhart, Sheldahl, and the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in both Polk, Story, and Boone County in Iowa for the formation of the 4 Mile Creek Watershed Management Authority. Supervisor Tooth.
Okay. My favorite topic is watershed management authorities.
You become the expert.
By default. We are currently in a watershed management authority for the Squaw Creek. This is almost an identical 2080 agreement. We've been asked to become a part of the 4 Mile Creek Watershed Management Authority, and I've got a map that you guys can take a look at. 4 Mile Creek starts in Slater and heads southeast down through Polk County. A little bit of it is in Boone County. And again, they're trying to capture some of this community development block grant money that is available through the Iowa Economic Development Authority and the DNR. So the 2080 is there. If you guys have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
We're the major participant in the Squaw Creek. Are we going to be a minor participant in this?
my plan.
That's,
And same question, Jessica. Have you had a chance to review this? And
no.
It looks the same.
Yes. And this actually went through ICAP.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So.
Right.
I'd move approval.
I'll second it.
Been moved and second the approval of the 2080 agreement between the aforementioned entities. Is there further discussion?
The only thing I'll warn you, Wayne, is if we approve this, you're going to have to sign 16
I noticed that.
Signature pages so we can get it recorded this week. So.
Okay.
Good okay. point.
All right. With that, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Okay, and okay, this one refer. Okay. Agency report, emergency management, Keith Morgan, welcome.
In a tie.
Hard to recognize, I guess. Morning, gentlemen. Report for emergency management. The diversity and the intensity of the issues that my office has been handling has kept us busy. We've been working with Iowa Homeland Security Emergency Management Division to ensure that Story County has met its requirements to be compliant with Iowa code when it comes to planning, training, and exercises for fiscal year 2012. But just being compliant is not the goal of our agency. We are working to enhance the communications aspects of our medical response plan to ensure it provides a structure that rapidly reacts to a mass casualty event. Our focus is on ensuring that assets that normally communicate through one dispatch agency will be able to talk with other Story County resources that may primarily work through a different dispatch agency. To do that, we are reviewing the overall communication structure within Story County. As you know, it's a trunk system, to be able to identify those frequencies that are common amongst all the dispatch agencies and would be ones that could serve as command and control networks, and also to have a backup should one of the three towers go down on that. Another item that we've been working with, the coordinator, the deputy, and personnel from Story County Environmental Health attended training focused on how to respond to an agricultural disease outbreak here in Iowa. The response to a disease outbreak would be different, as the response would come primarily from the state on downward, as opposed to what we normally work with, which is an issue occurring in one of our local jurisdictions and working its way on up. Still, the state veterinary officials recognize the value of an integrated local response and integrating their assets into our response plan, and they focus the training on using the National Incident Management System to manage their response to an event. This training is going to be valuable, as next year we're going to revise ESF 11, our ag and food ESF, which deals with these kind of issues. And the information that we've learned from that training will be very, very valuable. I attended an airport exercise down in Des Moines, along with some EMS folks from different volunteer agencies that we have. I observed the command and control aspects of their response so that I could have a better understanding if we ever have to support Polk County, how we would plug into their system. And the EMS personnel looked at a new triage system that is being implemented down in Polk County and that we've worked with Polk County to bring up here to Story County. Again, to give us some commonality, because in a mass casualty situation, many of our patients would have to go down to the Polk County area as overflow. In the next quarter, Story County Emergency Management will be coordinating the work needed to revise the Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan. As you know, this has been an ongoing project for us, and Story County is the subgrantee for this project. This will be a large project that is going to absorb a fair amount of time and effort in my office, but the work will hopefully identify ways that Story County can reduce its risks to disasters in the future. As you may know, you should have received a text message that outlines our continuing efforts to train Story County employees to man the Emergency Operations Center should we have a disaster. First off, I'd like to thank the employees, the department heads, and the elected officials in supporting these efforts. I feel we've laid a good training foundation that will allow us to move to the more difficult, realistic training, which is going to occur in October, which is what you received the text about. The training we are going to be conducting in October will take everyone through the first hour of an EOC activation. And I think it's going to help everybody prepare for their duties inside our EOC. And I encourage elected officials and department heads to support this training by allowing their employees to participate, to free up the time for them to come down to one of those three training sessions. Finally, we're working closely with public health and area hospitals as they form medical coalitions. This is in response to direction from Iowa Department of Public Health. The effort is being led by our medical community, and it's inclusive of surrounding communities. Our effort welcomes the opportunity to participate in this process to try and integrate, to develop a more efficient and effective emergency response network that does, again, span across the different counties and will rely upon gained efficiencies by every of the different counties participating and freeing up resources when we should need them. With that, I open it up to the board for any questions that they might have.
More of a comment than anything. From the day that you took over directing emergency management, you have just kind of continued to move us forward in a very positive way, looking at areas where we, through training and collaboration with other entities, would position ourselves to deal with any mass casualty incident that might come down the pike. And I think this is sometimes I wonder, I said, do you really take time to breathe a little bit? Because as I read your emails and all the different things that are going on, I really want to commend you on behalf of the citizens of Story County for your proactive effort in this endeavor. And I like the idea of how we are collaborating with Polk County and others as we start to take a look at the potential for what would happen in the event that there was a large-scale casualty and we needed to weigh in and have that. We've always had those 2080 agreements where we could seek mutual aid and things of that nature, and that's true of all 99 counties. But I think your leadership in this particular area where we can identify clearly what some of the needs will be would speed up the process immensely. So I just want to congratulate you on the part of the board and Rick, who is our contact with the emergency management. Are you chairing that board now, or are you vice chair now?
No, I'm chair.
Oh, okay. So I think between the two of you, this is a job well done. So,
yeah,
and please commend the board as well of all the mayors and so forth that make up the emergency management board.
Yes, sir. And that's I'd like to reiterate or build upon that I'm very pleased. I hear some of the other commissions where the leadership of the different communities is not as actively involved as we have on our commission, and that's what makes the difference. When it flows on down through, and when there is active participation, we strengthen the overall response network, both down at the local level, at our level, and it allows us to interact better with agencies around us.
And Wayne, I'd just like to piggyback on what you said. Since Keith's been with us, I mean, he is he's organized, diligent. He's willing to challenge the status quo, which I think is causing some chagrin among some of the people at the state that he's asking some of the tough questions. But he's doing it all to the benefit of and for the benefit of Story County. I want to make sure we include Melissa. Her ability to make the transition into her role, it has been outstanding, and she's a big part of what we do down there. And let's just hope that as hard as we work and as much as we're putting into to being ready, let's hope we never have to use any of these services. So,
well stated. Well stated. Okay.
Thanks, Keith.
Good, thank you. Okay. Next up is departmental report, community service, our CPC, Deb Shulroth. Okay.
Morning.
Good morning.
The report that you have before you, the numbers are reflected kind of in a little bit different fashion because we're wrapping up fiscal year 12 and then starting fiscal year 13. And I'll get back on track with a more accurate quarterly report. But we're looking at the period covering June 2012 through August of 2012. And in general assistance, I'll just look at year-to-date totals. For fiscal year 12, we served a total of 286 families and individuals. Families make up the lion's share of who we served in fiscal year 12. And to date, for fiscal year 13, we've served 48 single and family household individuals through our office. Denials, during fiscal year 12, we issued a total of 1,031 denials. And in fiscal year 13, we have issued 199 as of the end of August. Folks who applied but did not return to complete the assistance process in fiscal year 12, that number totaled 103. And in fiscal year 13, we've had 15 that have not returned to complete the process. What that means is they've been given additional paperwork, might be a form that their landlord has to complete, or they have to finish getting the remainder of their utility bill paid off so we can pay the current month, and so there's a little bit of legwork that has to be done, but they did not return with the completed work, and we're not always sure what happens in those cases if people find other ways to get those bills paid or what the case may be, but we do track who's come through, who could potentially be eligible, but needed to complete the process.
So, Deb, it looks like we've got consistency on general assistance who we're serving. We've got consistency on people that applied but did not return, but we're up a little bit on denials so far.
Yes. Yep. And I think what's happening is within the community that assists with rent and utilities, a lot of the other organizations will only assist once a year, and they have a fixed amount in what they will provide assistance for, where our office will assist every 6 months.
Yep.
And we do have caps. I mean, for rent, we'll assist in a single household case, $400 towards rent, $450 if utilities are included. For families, we'll assist $500 in rent, $550 if utilities are included. So those caps are much larger than what, a church can provide assistance with, or the Emergency Residence Project or some of those other organizations. So the primary types of assistance during the reporting period include rent in the amount of $22,131, utilities in the amount of $2,544, and miscellaneous, which would include meds, transportation, and burial, at $12,351. SSI interim reimbursement. Have some good news to share on this. This program is where the county will assist with rent and utilities while an individual is going through the SSI appeal process, and we had two clients that continued their involvement with the program. We did have three individuals, and the one individual did get approved for SSI benefits, and so in August, our office received reimbursement in the amount of $2,856, and that was the total amount that our office assisted with in rent and utilities, so we were fully reimbursed. And I don't know if you caught the article in the Des Moines paper, I believe it was on Friday, there was just it's kind of in a side column about some criticism throughout the country, and that judges are not using consistent criteria in awarding benefits, and so there's going to be some sort of a crackdown on that, which could end up a couple of things, taking longer to get the benefits and to go through the appeal process. And then some people who simply are applying and may not be found eligible. And so it becomes an issue as to whether or not they can work or how much they can work, that sort of thing. So, and we're already seeing it taking a good 18 months to 24 months when someone's appealing. We've always been told there's a backlog for the administrative law judge to hear the cases. So I think that's going to continue. Excuse me. Substance abuse during the reporting period. We ended fiscal year 12 with assisting 67 individuals in court-ordered treatment. And then for fiscal year 13, we've already assisted 14. Asset. In June, we had a training about audits. This was an effort that United Way of Story County together, and we had Brian Dieter from Mary Greeley come and talk, and then there was another individual from the private sector And so most of the asset agencies were in attendance and asked questions, so that was good. We had our annual agency training in August for the agencies, and we went through changes made to the budget forms, expectations with regards to the liaison visits and the hearings and other kinds of reporting that asset does require. So we are gearing up for the budgets and the allocations season. The budgets are due October 1st from the agencies, and so the administrative team will be getting together that afternoon and looking at the budgets. I will mention, since this report had been written, we did have one of our county volunteers contact me and said she had to step down from participating in the asset process. That was Julie Schreitmuller. I am meeting with somebody tomorrow who's interested in serving in this capacity, so I'll keep you updated on the progress with that. Case management, we served an average of 357 clients during the reporting period. That continues to go up primarily because of the shift of services from the Richmond Center to the Community Life Program, where we're getting more people on the Medicaid-funded programs, and so in order for them to access those programs, they have to have a case manager. So we're seeing an increase in the referrals. We averaged about 11 referrals a month. We did discharge 10 individuals during the reporting period, and the caseload size is consistent at about 32 cases per case manager. Other activities in our office in June, community services staff participated in the EOC training that was offered with emergency management, and we're looking at participation again in the upcoming training in October. We had DHS staff visit our office and provide technical assistance on our fiscal year 13 MHDD budget and talked about the impacts that Story County is dealing with as a result of loss of revenues. And then we also had the meeting in June with the CPCs and Board of Supervisor members from about a nine-county area to talk about regionalization. In August, we hosted our open house and had about 35 guests, and they represented 15 local offices and agencies. And then I will let the board know, too, I am participating on Saturday in the League of Women Voters of Iowa is having an issues forum. And it's at Grinnell College, and I've been invited to talk about MHDD redesign. Not the only one talking about it, but from a county perspective. Any questions or comments?
Nope.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is information technology. Barbara, come on up.
This is the first time I've reported to the board. I wasn't sure what format you expected, so I came up with what I call my living document. I will revise it as you make suggestions to me. What I've done is gone over, looked at what we've been working on in the department and what has taken the most time and the most resource, and kind of given you the highlights here. If you'd like to see more detail, you know, I'm more than happy to provide that. One thing that I mentioned earlier that's been a constant, I'll say thorn in our side, is the CLIP application that we're working on with CLP and ACS. And what this does, it makes it easier for the users to enter notes and medication information about the clients into this program, and they take laptops to the different sites and enter information, and part of the issues are sometimes internet connectivity isn't the greatest. And it used to be in the old Notice Notes program that any notes you were entering would be stored if the internet connection was lost, and then the notes would be pushed to the server once the connection was brought back up. And that hasn't happened with the new program. And so users have found that information they've entered has been lost, or the formatting isn't quite the way they wanted it to be. And so an HTML editor was created, and this just caused all kinds of problems because we have, there's a large turnover in the staff that's using this, and there's a varied experience level with computers, and as as I was talking to Gail, she said some people don't even know the left click from the right click on the mouse. We had to be very careful to make this as easy to use as possible. Thus, the reason for all the changes. I think we're finally at a point where the functionality equals the expectations.
Yeah.
And part of the issue, too, all these changes were being made in a live database, which in IT you'd never do that. So we did implement a test environment for them to push all these changes to, and then the users tested in the test environment, which helped. It didn't affect everyone then. It only affected the testers, so that helped tremendously. But I think we're now at a point where we should be able to wrap this up within the next week or so. Another huge, especially this time of the year with tax season, was the tax estimator. When we implemented the Civic Plus program, it broke that, and Matt Emerson had created it. And, of course, he's no longer with the department, so we were struggling trying to figure out which line in the SQL database actually controlled this. And he did. He was here on site for a MAP meeting last week, and we did sit down with him, and he showed us what to do, and he tweaked it, and we're within $100 plus or minus, and after all, it is an estimator. So when we do our upgrade in January with the Tyler software, this will break again. So we need to, I think at that time, come to a decision. Are we going to continue with a homemade in-house application, or do we look for something that's canned and will have support? So the next item on my agenda is the network administrator position, which I visited a few weeks ago and got this approved. We have Alyssa received 22 resumes in response, and we did extend the time period this was open because we were not getting any response. And I was quite disappointed. In the last time I had advertised for an IT position in Des Moines, I received 90 resumes, so I wasn't quite expecting only 22. Out of those, I did interview 7. Qualified candidates, and it's narrowed down. We have made an offer, haven't heard anything back yet, and that will be contingent on a background check. So I think we're close to adding some additional much-needed help to our staff. The next item of import is the mobile laptops for the Sheriff's Department. So far, we've deployed 5, and the schedule we were working on has been, when Jeff Dodds requests the laptops and they're rolled out, we're ready to roll all of them out at once right now because we've got the image created, which once you get that created, then you can put it on each laptop and you can roll it out. So we do have, there's supposed to be 25 laptops in all, so we're ready. 5 have been rolled out, and OSSI is going to be on site to implement the new jail software in November, so everything has to be rolled out by then. So I think we're doing pretty well with that. I also wanted to bring up the IP phone system. Our current phone system is, Paula looked it up, and I think it was implemented in 1993. So it's got a little
age. Has technology changed since 93?
Technology's been just a little bit improved since then. Alliance Technologies was sponsoring an IP phone seminar in Ames, which I attended, and learned about the ShorTel system. I've worked with several different IP phone systems, Cisco, Polycom, Nortel. They all offer their own individual little bells and whistles. This one had a lot to offer. This is just the start of a lot more research into this. What an IP phone system will do for Story County is make us all as if we were in the same room. It'll reduce long-distance charges, and it will be an opportunity for us to help the DHS out with their phone dilemma right now.
While I'm on this topic, I do know that Cisco has a contract with the National Association of Counties to provide service, and we as a member may be able to receive a fairly good rate if you find that that's what that product is, something we would be interested in. And I think they just need to be reminded of that we are a member of the National Association of Counties and have used the leverage in purchasing equipment for a number of years. So just something to be thinking about.
Yeah, and I would just encourage, we need to Barb, I think we need to Band-Aid through both our phone system and DHS to get through this fiscal year, but we need you ready to bring us a recommendation during budget time
yes.
for FY14.
Yes. I have talked with Darren about that. As a matter of fact, ACS has recently replaced a system similar to what the DHS currently has, and it's a nicer, newer model. They were just going to throw away the old equipment. I've talked to Darren about it, and if that system will work to hold us over for the DHS or even work as a backup system, we're open to that option. We're looking at figures right now to see how much the client wants for that old system. If they don't want it, we'd have to see what it would be to bring it under the maintenance plan that they've canceled. So that's the direction we're taking right now. A problem we're going to run into with the DHS is that an IP phone system runs over your network, and the state has to have a separate network just for security's sake. So that may take a little more configuration. It's certainly possible. It's just something we need to make sure that we're aware of. I also wanted to talk about the DOT fiber project. We've been attending meetings about this. I don't know if you're familiar with this. This is they work with the ICN to bring fiber up 39 or 35 and across 30, and they are going to connect it to the hospital. This would be beneficial to us to pay for running from the hospital to the Justice Center, and they have said they will only charge us $15,000. For this short run, we'd get two pair out of a 72-pair fiber run. They did present a contract, and Jessica and I looked at it. She made some changes. The DOT came back and asked why the changes, and we're going to go over that this afternoon. So it looks pretty good. We're pretty close on that. However, I received information that $15,000 that we thought we wouldn't need to pay to the ICN until next fiscal year, they're asking for it now, ASAP, as soon as possible. And this was explained to me, the DOT runs on an annual budget, but the ICN runs on monthly services budget, so they don't have the luxury of letting that go. That's something that we'll need to discuss where we come up with those funds.
I may not be clear in my question here, but when you mention the possible link to the Justice Center,
yes.
Currently the counties are not a part of the system of the ICN as far as the state is concerned. So if we wanted to use the ICN, right now we've got to go to Iowa State and use in Largo Marcino Hall, I believe, to get on to the hookup. Would this mean that we could go right to the Story County Medical Center here, because I don't see us actually being able to get on it right now at the Justice Center. This is not going to allow us to be able to access the ICN at this point.
It's my understanding that the ICN is running the fiber, and they will allow us to use two strands to do whatever we want with that.
Okay.
It won't be connected to their network. The opportunity for us is that it would be a great backup system
gotcha.
In case of emergency, but they don't really own the fiber. It's a little complicated just in the fact that the DOT is an entity that will be there. ICN may not be. So even though ICN is running the fiber, it comes from the DOT.
Okay.
And this is part of a project that the DOT is, they've run the fiber up the interstate. There will be cameras.
The camera system.
All the way up the interstate, and then all the way between Nevada and Boone along Highway 30. And that's where this all started. The DOT is actually managing the project. That's why we've had the meetings through the DOT.
And they have done the trenching. The fiber actually won't be laid until next summer in June. However, there is the cost for the trenching, which is where that $15,000 is coming from, and that's the cost they've already outlaid now. So,
thank you.
I also wanted to add, just as a final FYI, after coming to Story County, I was surprised at some of the attitude in the IT department that, as far as software support goes, in my background, we support all software, and here there was a little bit different thinking on some of the individual packages. And Teresa came to my office and asked for some help with ProLaw. She was struggling with offering support to her staff and asked if brought a list of classes and asked if I thought IT would be interested in attending any of those. I did attend the admin class in Des Moines last week. I think it is essential for IT to become involved in these different projects so that when they do have a question, at least we have a general idea of different areas that we can help them with. And it was very... I was very interested in the class. The teacher was excellent. I think it's something that we should do more of. Any questions for me?
I support that philosophy, and I thank you for having it. For me, IT does not need to be the answer to every technology issue, but they need to know how to go get the answer and be willing to go get the answer.
Right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work.
All right.
Good. Okay. Other reports? None. Liaison assignments, Paul?
Pass.
Oop. Good. And I pass. Public comment, 2, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action, anything. Okay, seeing nothing. Announcements from the supervisor, Paul?
Pass.
Rick, very briefly, this Thursday and Friday I will be in St. Louis attending Region 7 Health Equity Council. This was a council that I was appointed to earlier this spring, representing the state of Iowa. I think there are about 6 other representatives from around the state. This conference will be the first face-to-face conference by all the participants. The Region 7 involves Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, and Iowa. So this will give me the first opportunity to really understand the basis of where we're going, how it's going to play out within our state. It is one of the background of this. This is a national partnership for action dealing with how to end health disparities, particularly for minorities, African Americans, and others. And on October 1st, I will participate in a regional conference call and a webinar, and this might be something I might want to invite you or someone from IT to come up and set in on the webinar, and it really talks about the Affordable Care Act and you and us as a county and what role this may play for us as if this moves forward. So just having as much information and background on this for our standpoint, I think will be very helpful. So I'll reach out to you a little bit later as far as what we need to do. The webinar is scheduled from 1:30 to 3:30 on October 1st. That's a Monday. Okay? All right.
So move adjournment.
Second.
And we'll move.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh.
We didn't do public comment, too.
Ahead of you. Yes, we did. Yes,
we did. Move adjournment.
And I'll recess. Second. Move to second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Thanks to all.